Hi, thank you so much. My name is Cassandra. I'm an emotional eater, bulimic. Good to be here. So I've been committed to OA for 1 year, 10 months, and 26 days. And I've been abstinent for 5 months, 23 days. And my abstinence is abstaining from binging and purging behavior. And so I'm very grateful to be here. I'm also a first 12 days in OA temporary sponsor. Really love that service. I think I'd like to encourage fellows to do that kind of service more. And a little bit about myself. So my first compulsive behavior began at the age of 8 years old. And I would eat in secret, and I would eat compulsively. And I believe now, as an adult, and really looking back and having some perspective and help with, outside help, outside resources, kind of processing these things that happened in childhood, I really believe I turned to food because my life was unmanageable. So, and I mean that in the sense that there's different types of unmanageability for me. So there's the external unmanageability of, well, it would be, I guess, now as an adult, like, the job loss, the problems with the family, the some fellows incur debt from not being able to maintain their compulsive eating, all sorts of consequences, right? So those are the external ones. But then the internal unmanageability, and the one that I'm referring to when I was a child, was just the emotional turmoil and the emotional distress that I was feeling. I had no idea how to manage. And so my story does involve a history of abuse, of sexual abuse in particular. And that really changed everything in that it changed my relationship with my body. I became very aware of my body in ways that I hadn't been before. I felt that what had happened to me had happened because I looked a certain way, and when puberty hit, that was even worse, coming into, a more womanly figure. And so it really, and that sort of idea around body image and ties into other compulsive behaviors that I've had in relationship with men in particular and things like that. So it started that compulsive behavior because I didn't know how to deal with the emotional distress that I was in, and I was seeking to dissociate both from physically from my body and just emotionally numb out. That was later reproduced through other behaviors of self-injury and things like this that are really, kind of go beyond the scope of OA, but are still part of my story. And I began to restrict then at the age of 15 well into college, because I became an overweight child from the compulsive overeating, and my body was always a topic of conversation in my household with my parents, which was always confusing because my mom is a feeder, I think they call them, really pushy with the food. Here, eat. Have you eaten well? And in my household, eating well, have you had enough, is like Thanksgiving full. Like, I really, it's like, have you had enough? Are you full now? Are you should eat. You need, And so that was always the measure of a good meal and having eaten enough. But then it was confusing because then there would be comments of, just my body and being overweight, and so it was confusing. It's like, wait, you want me to lose weight, but now, but you're pushing the food, and so what do I, so what's the answer? Because if I don't eat the food, then my mom is going to give me the cold shoulder because she put all this time into the food, and now I don't want to, I want to eat less of the food and not finish the food. And then so that was always a confusing thing. And I remember an aunt giving me, I must have been like 10, I think, giving me a diet book, because in my family, the women in the house are some of them focused, also have their own body obsession, and she gave me a book when I was 10. She's like, "This is a really good one here. I think it'll help." So I'm just people being very intrusive, you know, very like very focused on my body. So I began to restrict at a young age, and then when I went into college, I picked up other, you know, again with the other compulsive behaviors and the other, and that really started my bulimia, alcoholic drinking. I would restrict all day. I would be so meticulous and controlled with my food. So, you know, I wanted to just eat safe foods and be very controlled. And I always say in this part is, you know, when I was in the dining hall in college, I never tried an omelet. And oh, I'm sorry, can we refer to foods or keep it general?
Go ahead, and if anybody has any concerns, just chat with us privately and we'll ask Cassandra to refrain. But go ahead, Cassandra.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't. I didn't have any foods that I deemed really fatty or fried, or you know, I didn't allow that. But I would go into these, you know, into these drunken states, and then that's when I really gave in, and that's when I ate because it's coming up anyway, and that's how the bulimic behavior began. Let's see. And then what happened as I came into 12-step recovery in general is that I started to notice a pattern of whenever I would abstain from these other, you know, substances and behaviors, my weight would just skyrocket. And then when I, you know, went back out because this is, I struggled with coming to terms with that, with really acknowledging the powerlessness of that. I would lose the weight, right? And then I would come back into recovery and I'd gain the weight. And so I first came into OA in 2014, peaked into OA in 2014. And I was so not ready to hear the message. I remember walking into this, it was held in a hospital, and there were three people. There was one woman who was morbidly obese, one woman who looked severely underweight, and one gentleman who was also on the larger side, and they were kind of gloomy and kind of, you know, and I didn't want any that they had. I saw all the differences and no similarities. I judged, and I don't remember a thing they said because I think I may have tuned it out. I think I didn't. I just wasn't ready to hear the message, and I was always told to tackle the alligator that's closest to the boat. And there were other behaviors and substances that were going to kill me faster. And so OA and dealing with the eating disorder took, you know, was on the back burner. And I love these food, you know, these little. Oh, muted there for a second. Food puns, but yes, back burner. So what brought me to OA is that in 2020, right before COVID, I had a another traumatic sexual abuse experience now as an adult. And then I quit the job that I was at. The in shelter in-house COVID order hit, and so I gave myself permission. I think it was both again that emotional in the internal unmanageability, and I sought comfort and safety in food, and also gave myself permission to just I'm gonna really go at it and eat everything that I never allowed myself to eat because it's COVID and everyone's gaining weight, gaining 50 pounds and becoming an alcoholic. So what the hell? I'm just gonna. And I ate myself up to well over 300 pounds, highest recorded 326. I'm sure I went well over that. I was really struggling with my health now. You know, I'm 35 today, so this was 2020. So, you know, I was struggling with my blood work. I was having physical joint pains, my knees, my ankles. I couldn't walk more than a few blocks because my ankles would just hurt so much, and I could barely take care of myself. Everything felt like such a chore and such a mountain to climb. It was just so strenuous on my body. And I am a caregiver for my parents, and so I said I can barely take care of myself. How am I going to take care of them? And I decided to go for weight loss surgery. And in fact, that's why I came back to OA. Came back to OA. Let's see, 2014. So I came back. 2023. So almost 10 years later, and 100 pounds heavier from when I peaked in, right, in 2014. And I came back in preparation for the surgery because I already knew I was a compulsive overeater. I already knew my relationship with food was not normal. And so I came in preparation for surgery. And they told, you know, I heard in the rooms and in weight loss surgery specific rooms, they do surgery on your stomach, not your brain. And I'm like, yay, I get it. And I did mentally, but I really didn't get it at a deep level. I didn't understand it until the bulimic behavior came back post-op. And that started because I was restricting in the post-op period because I thought that would give me more results quicker because I think I know what's best. And so that really set me up to the, when I could start to eat food again, integrate solid foods again. I was just, it was just, I was non-compliant and out of control. And I was so fearful of, oh my God, I'm going to do some real internal damage. You know, there's been fellows who've died from sepsis because the stomachs have ruptured and there, you know, there's some real severe consequences. And so I was so fearful of that, that I thought that, you know, the self-induced vomiting was going to be the solution. It's going to be the workaround, the surgery. That's what I that was what happened. And so I really came, like I was really like, this is ridiculous. Like this is crazy. This is insanity. So when I came into OA, I have to admit I treated it like a diet club. I thought that the plan of eating was the solution. I heard the, you know, the fellows in the room, especially the 100 pounders, and I'm like, okay, this certain food plan that they're on and they're abstaining from certain ingredients, like that must be the solution because they've gotten results. So that attraction, not promotion, I was really looking for the attraction of the weight loss. That was the attraction. It wasn't spiritual at that point. There was nothing spiritual about my program at that point. And I relapsed with the plan of eating because what I'm actually healing from is perfectionism and rigidity. And so there were certain plans of eating that I tried to imitate and take on and, you know, styles of recovery that really played into that all or nothing black and white thinking. If I go over a certain amount, if I have just a little bit more of what I said I was going to have and I committed to my sponsor, then I've already messed up. I might as well go all out and I'll just start tomorrow again. And that's the kind of cycle I found myself in early in recovery. And so I have to remember that abstinence in no way is abstaining from compulsive eating or overeating and compulsive food behaviors. It doesn't say abstain, you know, we abstain from and I hate to say it, sugar and flour. That's not how my disease manifests. And so it doesn't mention food in the definition of abstinence, right? And so for me, I had to be very clear about I'm abstaining from a certain behavior, and the OA tool of the plan of eating supports that abstinence. And it focuses on the what I eat, when I eat, how, why, where, right? All these different parts. It just so happens that for me, the in my plan of eating, I don't have limitations for what I eat, except if something's gonna, you know, I'm lactose intolerant or I have some sensibilities to certain foods with a history of IBS as a result of my alcoholic drinking, mind you. You know, like I have certain limitations there, but my focus is not on what I eat because again, I'm recovering from perfectionism and rigidity around food. This food is good. This food is bad. If I eat the bad food, I've messed up. It's going to ruin my day. I might as well go all out. I'll just start tomorrow. Like that was my cycle. And so, so for me, I do focus on flexibility in my program, progress, not perfection, and not treating OA like a diet club, which our literature talks about the diet club mentality. The diet works. If you're not seeing results, it's because you are not doing it right. You're not trying hard enough. You can do better, right? You don't have the willpower. That's the diet mentality for me. And right, treating away like a diet club. So my plan of eating is very different, and I do go to anorexia bulimia focus meetings, AB meetings, where I find there's a little bit more identification in my approach to that. But I do today try to listen for similarities, not differences, and listen for the similarities in the spiritual part of the program, which I am aware of the time. So progress, not perfection, and practice makes progress. I really do practice a lot, the tools and the step work. That is the solution to my life being unmanageable, which is the reason that I eat and continue to fall into these behaviors. It's because I don't know how to live my life without the use of and fill in the blank. So like I mentioned, all these other compulsive behaviors, in this case, we're talking about food. So I, without using the behavior, without using the food, I don't know how to deal with resentment and anger and sadness and loneliness and fear. Fear is so big for me. God, fear is huge for me. I don't know how to deal with my life. And so the 12 steps really are that guide, that blueprint to living. And it starts with that powerlessness. I'm powerless over my food behaviors, yes, but I'm also powerless over people, places, and things. So I can't control other people's actions. I right, what do I what is under my realm of control or influence is my thoughts, my actions, my words. That's it. Everything else is I got to give it to God, and I've got to practice acceptance and love and compassion, and that's what the program is helping me with. And let's see, my second relapse was because I've had two major ones. The first one with that idea of plan of eating is the solution, right? And the second one was on not turning over a 10th step. I love the 10th step is my program. The 10th step is I used to say a steps 4 through 9, and that's true. But a fellow is like, actually, it's working steps 1 through 12. And I'm like, oh, but so it's encompassing, the real I hate to say the puns, meat and potatoes of the program, right? So it's getting to the character defects. It's getting to the how am I adding to the how am I my problems are of my own making in my life. I step on the toes of my fellows. I am imposing, I am trying to fix, manage, and control and exert my willpower over people and situations, trying to get my needs met, right? So looking at those character defects. So that second relapse, I'd done the 10th. I'd shared a little bit about it, but really hadn't shared in depth. Didn't call my sponsor. Sponsorship is a tool of the program, and I have to remember to use my sponsor. So I didn't use my sponsor. I didn't really turn it over. And that's a step three thing for me, turning over my will in my life. So I turn it over every time I write, I used writing a lot, write my 10th, write my thoughts, get it out of my head onto paper, and I share it. Because steps 4 and 5, right? Step 5, share it with another human being. No fourth step is complete without a fifth step. That's where the relief is. It's in the sharing. Step 4, if I just keep it there, it's pain. It's painful. It's painful to look at these things and look at these patterns and look at how I've, the wreckage of my past. And on step 5 is really that relief and that place where that the perhaps for the first time I'm entirely honest with another human being, and I can experience love, unconditional acceptance of who I am, where I'm at. And that's an acronym in OA that I absolutely love for for higher power. It's in the OA 12 and 12 step two. Step two is in that book is fantastic. It's healing power. So it's the healing power of love in the rooms. That is the higher power. There's also healing process, which is new to me, and I love it because it refers for me to the steps. It is a healing process. The steps really heal. How do I soothe and comfort myself without the use of food? For me, I work my step 10, I'll be honest, and I have to turn it over. Like, that's going back to that second relapse. Oh, was that 15 or 20?
It's just a guide.
Oh,
You can
okay.
finish.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I'll finish my thought. Yes. That turning it over. So I turn it over every time I call my sponsor, I call a fellow, I share at a meeting. That is turning it over for me. And what else can I say? Relapse for me has been a step three issue. I know that's a little controversial, but for me, it's when I put myself in a corner I can't get out of abstinently. I am fearful. I in a moment of fear, I retreat into this place of self-reliance. I know how to fix this. Let me go back to that. What's going to fix it? And again, for me, that emotional, internal unmanageability, internal distress. And so turning it over is really, it is instrumental in my program. And I'm very grateful for the fellowship, for this healing power of love in the rooms. And I will end it there. And my topic will be, have I come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity? And what is that higher power for you?